This podcast is paid for by Principle. No matter who you are or where you are in life, with the right financial partner, progress is possible. Welcome to Progress Personified. I'm Justin Warner. Last time we met Charlie Linville, a bomb technician in the Marines who, after stepping on an IED in Afghanistan, is severely injured and struggling to recover.
I just found myself at the lowest point in life that I could imagine. I didn't want to get out of bed. Like, I stopped having a life. I stopped being social. I didn't talk to family. I was yelling. I mean, I wasn't even having conversations with my wife or my kids. I was just yelling. I was just angry. And I just found myself a shell of anything that I resembled previously.
After nearly 2 years and countless surgeries to heal his leg, Charlie had a tough talk with his doctors. What he told them surprised everyone.
This is not a good quality of life. I'm depressed. I'll end up divorced. And then soon after that, I'll end up dead. So let's change the strategy here and just please amputate my leg.
In many ways, Charlie was one of the lucky ones, a soldier who stepped on a bomb and left the battlefield with all of his limbs. And yet here he was making the decision to remove his right leg below the knee.
I needed the amputation to happen. I needed there to be a turn in my life. And I needed somebody to kind of shake me and say, hey, snap out of it, because you are not who you used to be.
What's it like to wake up and look at your legs on the day of your surgery?
So the morning of, I remember taking my last hot shower and having the hot water run across my foot for the last time. I knew I would never feel that sensation ever again. And I felt like the monkey was off my back, right? Like this force that's just been keeping me down is gone.
Once Charlie decided to move forward with the amputation, his future direction became more clear.
The path was go to prosthetics, get a prosthetic limb, learn how to walk. And from that moment, once you learn how to walk, I mean, I'll just learn how to use it and I can go off and do whatever I want. You know, there's a path for me in life now, and that was very uplifting.
At first, adjusting to a prosthetic limb was difficult for Charlie.
When I first got my prosthetic, I remember just walking on it, and for 2 weeks, it just felt like someone was jabbing a metal bar in the back of my calf, or what's left of my calf.
But he realized if he was ever going to get used to it, he needed to force himself to adjust. For some people, this would mean committing to walking on it for an hour or two every day. For Charlie, it meant signing up to do a triathlon 2 months after his amputation.
So when I decided to run the triathlon, my orthopedist told me, she's like, no, you can't do that. You know, shaking her head. It really just disbelief that I even decided that or made that a goal. I understood that it was kind of a ridiculous idea or goal to set that soon. But at the same time, I mean, it allowed me to show up every single morning in the physical therapy room. I broke the habit of just being on the couch and not taking part in life anymore. I broke all the habits and I said, you know what? I'm going to get up every day and I'm going to go train. And I'm going to train as hard as I can until I can't go anymore.
Once Charlie set his sights on the triathlon, no one could talk him out of it, not even himself.
I remember being in the middle of the 56-mile bike ride, and I went up this hill. And my leg was just pounding. I mean, it felt like someone's hitting with a sledgehammer. And I had the choice. I could have unclipped from my bike and just sat down or walked the bike up the hill. And I decided to stand up. And even though it hurt so bad, I saw it through. I made it up over the hill and came down the other side. I learned that my brain is going to tell me I'm going to quit. But as long as I keep going and make my body do it, I'm going to be successful.
Charlie's incredible turnaround got the attention of the Heroes Project, an organization that works with disabled veterans. They got in touch and asked him if he was interested in taking his recovery a few steps further, and about 29,000 feet higher.
The Heroes Project takes severely disabled veterans up the tallest mountains in the world, and they have this mission, or had this mission, of completing the seven summits of the world. So they had completed six of the seven. The last one was Mount Everest. And me being who I was, that was like the ultimate challenge, right? To go from the gutter of my life to the top of the world. I mean, talk about a turnaround. Like, I accepted the challenge. I'm like, yes, that is my new goal. Let's do this.
But attempting the highest summit on the planet even gave Charlie pause. And we're talking about a guy who used to defuse bombs for a living.
Saying that I was going to go climb Mount Everest, I mean, you know, able-bodied people don't say that. But once I realized that I needed something to change the mindset that I was in, Everest seemed like a logical choice. It's like, great. I mean, I'm going to set the goal that's so lofty, that's so insane, that people laugh at me because I'm kind of laughing at myself.
So what's your family say when you tell them, hey, I'm going to go climb Mount Everest?
You know, my wife was definitely apprehensive. You know, she had a husband that did, you know, infantry deployment. I deployed as a bomb disposal technician. I got hurt. She got me home alive. Now I'm going to go climb Everest, a very dangerous mountain in its own right. She just shook her head. But, you know, she's very supportive and knew that's the type of person I am. But when I told my parents, you know, they told me no. And I laughed. I said, well, last time I checked, I'm not a 16-year-old boy anymore. So you don't have a choice. This is just a courtesy call saying this is what I'm doing.
But telling your parents you're going to climb Mount Everest is a lot different than actually climbing Mount Everest. And Charlie had a lot to learn.
So I was not a mountaineer per se. I mean, I grew up in Idaho and backpacked in the hills here and the mountains, you know, but our tallest mountain here is 12,000 feet. It's nothing even close to 29,000 feet. So that was the other part of the deal. You know, I had to become a mountaineer.
So what does training like look like? In my head, all I see is like a Rocky montage, you know? I mean, what is this training like?
You know, the training is probably a lot like a Rocky montage. Maybe, you know, Mick not doesn't have me chasing chickens around, but my entire day was filled with something Everest related, or we were flying to South America into the Andes to get it at high altitudes with glaciers and get all the crevasse work in. So I was either on those trips or I was at home where I was exercising in the gym. You know, I had a 2-hour in the morning routine, and then I would go have lunch, and then I would go back and do another 2 hours, and then I would have dinner, and then I would go do a cardio run of some sort for another 90 minutes. So, I mean, there's definitely a good 6 to 7, maybe 8 hours a day where I was doing physical exercise to get my body ready for the challenge.
After months of rigorous training, in May of 2014, Charlie was ready to do what at one time seemed impossible, take on Mount Everest.
I tried to climb Mount Everest from the south side, and an avalanche cut loose and killed 16 Nepali Sherpas. And then it turned out that the mountain got shut down and we're not climbing that year. And so it's mixed emotions. You put all this work in and you can't climb, but also you understand why you can't climb because these men, these wonderful men have died on the mountain. So it's like, okay, I got to go home. But I came home, and the Heroes Project, being the outstanding organization that they are, decided that they were going to recommit and we were going to go back in 2015. So like, absolutely, I got this. Let's do it. I can do this one more year. Let's go.
Charlie threw himself back into his conditioning for another year, spending hours each day at the gym, drilling himself with rope and ladder training. The next spring, he was back at the foot of the giant mountain, ready to ascend.
2015, we get there. We were there for 2 hours having lunch, and all of a sudden, the just earth lets loose. I mean, 7.8 earthquake, just earth shaking. I didn't even have my leg on, so I couldn't even stand up. And you know, you realize that, okay, this is bad. Turn the radio on, you start getting the reports, you know, 10, 20, 20-some people dead at Everest Base Camp, and then thousands and thousands of people dead in the country of Nepal. And it's like, okay, like we're not climbing this year. It's big, it's way bigger than any climber. So we forewent the expedition and went back to Kathmandu and started helping out in the relief effort and delivered food and medical supplies and dug rubble out from buildings and just volunteered because you were there. It's just such a catastrophic thing to go through.
For 2 years, Charlie has knocked on the door of Everest, and twice he's been turned away. But he and the Heroes Project refused to take it as any kind of sign. and they decided Charlie would try once more.
The thought never really crossed my mind to cancel after two, you know, catastrophic years. You know, because history's on your side. I mean, you go back and look at Mount Everest over a century, and it's like the total fluke thing that just 2 years in a row these bad things happen. I mean, people die on Mount Everest every year. That's a given. It's going to happen. You know, you accept that responsibility as a mountaineer, but having two catastrophic years, there's no way. The odds are astronomical that it was going to happen for a third year. I mean, if they weren't big enough that it was going to happen 2 years in a row, having 3 years in a row.
In 2016, Charlie set out to tame Mount Everest. This time, he got a lot closer, but he wasn't quite sure he liked what he saw.
Oh, man. So being completely trained is one thing, then getting dropped off at the Lukla Airport and having 7 days to trek to Everest Base Camp and seeing it, you know, a couple times throughout the trek, it's definitely scary. I mean, that mountain has killed lots of people and people gotten frostbite, and I mean, it's dangerous. And so as I made the approach to base camp, you know, I definitely got butterflies and some nervousness, and then standing at the base and looking up at the Khumbu Icefalls, I mean, I was like, whoop, you know, swallowing a big gulp of air and saying, all right, well, this is what I'm here for, so let's do it.
Now on Charlie's third try, Everest opened its doors.
Every camp, every time we went up higher and higher, I got to see more of the mountain. I had moments, you know, especially like the second step on the north side, like, what am I doing here? Like, what? I'm crazy. Like, I could be at home hanging out with my kids, but no, I'm hanging off the side of a mountain staring at, this rope breaks right now, I'm going to fall a mile into Tibet. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'd have to scream twice before I hit the bottom.
As he climbed into thinner and thinner air, Charlie's fears melted away as he fell under the spell of the mountain.
You know, waking up to Mount Everest at 21,000 feet, unzipping your tent and seeing the tallest mountain in the world, I mean, what a sight to behold. And then you keep climbing, and I just knew that, like I said, it's something inside of me and really with the rest of the team, we just knew it was the year, it was gonna happen. And so everybody was smiling, joking, and really just got along well. And when it came time for Summit Push, you know, we experienced some high winds and some difficult, a few difficult days, but ultimately, you know, we got to the top of Mount Everest on May 19th.
Wow. I imagine you're feeling a huge sense of accomplishment, but specifically for you, Charlie, what's it feel like to stand up there?
It's taken 5 days of straight climbing to get there. I mean, you take a couple hours rest here and there, and you're freezing, right? It's really cold. But all that melts away because you have this epic view of the world. I mean, not that many people really have gotten to see the view from literally the roof of the world. And man, it's just overwhelming. It just consumes you. And not just the sky, but seeing the clouds and from a different angle where some of the clouds are below you, right? I mean, you're above where the clouds go, and the jet stream is, you know, close by. And just seeing, you can see Nepal, right? All the way through Nepal, and you can see out into Tibet and into China, and you can see the world starting to curve. You take a second to realize where you're at, and it's just, it's powerful. It's really powerful.
After everything Charlie had been through since he took that ill-fated step in Afghanistan, he got to stand on the tallest summit on Earth. But it wasn't just a personal victory.
Like, I needed it to prove to myself what I was capable of, but talking to all the veterans along the way, you know, other veterans needed somebody to see that, you know, even though they have injuries, the injury doesn't define us. It doesn't define who we are. I mean, we ultimately, in our spirit and our mental strength, defines who we are. And so I wanted to prove to them that it was possible.
So when you came back home from Afghanistan, did you ever imagine that this kind of progress was possible?
Progress is always possible. It's just how much work are you willing to put in?
Man, if Steve Rogers retires, I nominate you for Captain America. How about that? Charlie's temporarily hung up the Captain America uniform in favor of another difficult job, and that's helping to raise his kids. But Charlie has more adventure in store. He plans on summiting the highest peaks on each of the seven continents, and in March 2017, he'll attempt 50 skydives in 50 states, all in 50 days, simply because it hasn't been done. I don't know about you, but I have no doubt Charlie will succeed. To learn more about the inspiring work being done by the Heroes Project, visit theheroesproject.org. This was Progress Personified, and I'm Justin Warner. Thanks for listening. This podcast was created by Guardian Labs US and paid for by Principal. Produced by Carrie Budge and Devin Taylor. Presented by me, Justin Warner. Sound designed by Pascal Wise. And the series editor was Sachin Chanalikar.